are Locked On Big 12, your daily podcast on the Big 12 Conference, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everybody. Josh Neighbors here for the Locked On Big 12 podcast. Today it is June 9th, 2021, and on today's show, I speak with Stephen Simcox of Locked On Horned Frogs. We talk about a variety of topics on the show. TCU baseball losing their coach, Texas A&M, Texas and Texas Tech, their super regionals and their path there. We also get into the floated playoff expansion as well. So a fun conversation coming y'all's way here on this hump day. All right, everybody. It is a Wednesday edition of a Locked On Big 12 podcast. On today's show, Stephen Simcox joins us as he does every single week. He is from Locked On Horned Frogs. Stephen, busy week for you and everything happening at TCU. Obviously, they get knocked out of the NCAA baseball tournament in the regionals. They lose their coach to Texas A&M. Not a good week for weekend, I guess you could say now week-long stretch for TCU baseball.
No, it hasn't been. Last night recorded with Eric Hughes, who works at TCU baseball games, and we talk the team every week, and we get done recording, I post it, and at the end of it, we were kind of like kicking around, yeah, it sounds like this might happen with Jim Schlossnagel going to A&M. There's a lot of smoke there. And I wake up in the middle of the night last night, and I see that it's officially gone down. So kind of surprising. I mean, he's flirted with jobs in the past. Had an opportunity to take the Mississippi State job a couple of years ago and turned it down. So I don't know exactly why, you know, the timing and this specific job worked for him, or why he decided to make this move right this minute. But he's been there a long time. He's done a great job. And I think as much as they'll say, you know, it wasn't, once they lost that game to DBU on Saturday, you could kind of feel the air go out of that dugout. And part of that was a loss where you had a lead and you blew the game. But I think another part of it was this was kind of an open secret for the last few weeks of the season that he was at least heavily interested in that opening. So they bowed out quickly, and he moves on, and we'll see if they promote from within or if they go try to find somebody from outside the program. But he's been there 17 years. So first time they've had a baseball coaching search in a long time.
Yeah, there has been a lot of changes, I guess, this offseason, especially in the SEC, right? Two big ones, obviously LSU and A&M. And to see Schlossnagel, you know, take that spot at A&M, a couple things. I usually like to look at age. I think age is always a very good indicator, right, about when the right time is to make a move. You know, I kind of look at Kim Mulkey's situation. I believe she's about to turn 60, or she's 59, 58, you know, getting close to 60. And at that point, you know, if you want to make a move, you got to make a move. I think baseball, too, is one of those sports where there is a lot of you don't have to necessarily build a program at A&M, but it's building a baseball team is something that just takes a lot of effort, right? Building a program, because the two aspects, your fielding and your pitching, it is such a it's very cumbersome to attract talent, right, and to develop talent. We see it all the time, you know, with these guys who go to major league, you know, go to the league at a certain age, right? You got to convince a kid, hey, you know, if you don't get drafted, do you want to come play for me, right? Do you want to, you know,
right,
come play here? And hey, here's what I could see you doing. And also, you know, the kid doesn't work out as a starter, you know, how do you make him an effective reliever? There is so much, or moving kids around in positions, there's so much that goes into baseball. And for him, at the age of 50, you know, you start getting up there, and you know, this is probably for him going to be one of the last spots he goes to, right? I mean, you know, usually don't see a lot of guys coaching into their 70s, you know, 50 to 60. So I mean, I think age definitely plays a factor, especially in a sport like baseball, kind of like football, right? The program building is such a big part of it.
No, it's a good point. I mean, he's expelled a lot of energy trying to get that thing to a certain level and maintain it. And I think you could argue, I mean, it's impossible to say, and they looked like a team that could possibly make a deep run this year, but they had four straight trips to Omaha, and then it kind of plateaued after that, and they haven't been able to get back since. Now, it's only been four seasons, and really three, because one of them was cut short due to COVID, but it might have just also been a situation where, like, yeah, age, do I feel like I've done everything I can do here? Is it not going to get better than it did in that, you know, 4 or 5 year run where we were in the mix to win a national championship every single year? And also baseball is, it's an ancillary sport in college athletics. So, so much of it depends on how much the university and the athletic department is willing to invest in it, because you're limited with scholarships. And TCU has done a good job, but they're still a private school. So you're making up a lot of money. You're having to convince kids to really invest a lot in coming to school there if they're not going to get a full ride. So A&M, you know, that'll be easier. They obviously are going to give them a pay raise. They have great facilities. So it makes sense. He gets to stay in the state. He moves on. But no, that's a good point with the age. I mean, you do kind of get to a certain place where you're like, am I going to stay? I have to decide, like, am I going to stay here forever and be the man or woman who gets a statue and, you know, kind of ushers in the new regime? Or do I make this jump and try to have a second chapter of my career before it ends?
Right. Because, you know, for him, I mean, even if things don't go well at A&M, you know, you would have put yourself in a spot where if you want to keep coaching, you still have an opportunity to do it with your age, right?
Right.
And if he's in his mid-50s, upper-50s, he still has a chance. If you wait later on, you know, you hit 60, 61, you know, the opportunities might not be as prevalent. And also, I think, too, the attraction of an SEC job is that those schools have – I mean, even if the schools that suck at baseball, like, you know, my Missouri Tigers, I wouldn't say they suck, but they'd be very competitive in any other league. But, you know – the way the conference works and how competitive it is, it almost forces you to do it. Like, unless you just want to abandon it and be a complete joke, it's fine. But even in a place like Missouri, you know, the resources, they're starting to put more into sports like softball and baseball as they rise it. And I mean, you know, I'm not sure if you know about it, whether it's or not. I feel like we're starting to see where SEC schools for baseball are making money. I mean, you see those stadiums, you think about a full season of what we're seeing now at places like Arkansas and Ole Miss. I mean, there's no way you how do you lose money if you're putting 10,000 plus and you're selling tickets for all those games? And think about the number of home games that they actually have, right? I mean, you're playing, what, 30 plus, 40 home games in a season, you know what I mean? So there's an opportunity. I mean, those programs, like you mentioned, SEC schools, they're making more money off their baseball. I feel like they have to be at this point.
No, you're right. I mean, Vandy, like, they've gone all in on it, and they have a really good – program. They are probably making some money off it. I think Tennessee has shown this year that they want to be in that mix as well. Mississippi State has sellouts all the time. So it can be a revenue sport, and they're making it that way. And I think a lot of those schools, I know Eric Musselman's done a great job at Arkansas. I mean, they were in the Elite Eight last year. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, Dave Van Horn might be the second biggest name there other than Sam Pittman, because that baseball program is so, so good.
Right.
When they were playing Nebraska this weekend, I mean, it was just packed out. Even on a, you know, Monday afternoon, like, it's a sellout and people are going crazy watching the Hogs play.
Quick pause for the cause on today's show. Today's Locked On Big 12 podcast is brought to you all by Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting, best for you protein bar in the game today. Go to BuiltBar.com right now. Use the promo code LOCKED15. That's LOCKED15. LOCKED15 for 15% off on your next purchase. They've got 9 flavors going right now. Coconut, almond, cherry, raspberry, mint brownie, peanut butter brownie, double chocolate, and salted caramel. They've got 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories per bar. Once again, go to BuiltBar.com. Promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off today. Yeah, so let's talk about potential replacements. Who could TCU be targeting? I saw you had a tweet about it. It looks like they're doing a full search. And I think you hit the nail on the head with your tweet saying, look, you might end up hiring from within, but it's always better to do a holistic search where you look for all the, you know, look at all of your potential options. I think especially a school, you know, like TCU, it's had a lot of success. That's in a state like Texas, that's in a conference like the Big 12, that, you know, has a chance to put resources into it. You can get, I guess, you kind of put some blinders on, right? And kind of say, okay, I like what we got going on here. But with those assets and resources, you should take a look to see who can best maximize those.
Right. So, you know, Kirk Sarluth is the name that's going to come up first. He's their pitching coach. He's been there for 9 seasons. And he's had some other opportunities. Like, he was in the running for the Rice job last year and kind of took himself out of that mix. He had an interview to be the Yankees pitching coach. I don't think that got very far, but he was at least, you know, one of the people they talked to about that opening. So he's well-respected. He's a good recruiter. The tricky thing about him is the Cal State Fullerton job is also open. That's where he played. So I don't know how much interest he'll have in that, but I would imagine he might be kind of looking at both. I would be fine if they promoted him. And I know a lot of TCU fans are like, let's do that today. Let's just immediately like name him the head coach. And as you said, I just think that's kind of like a small program mentality. Like if he ends up being the dude, that's great. But I would get on the phone and Tony Vitello at Tennessee, he spent a brief time at TCU as a coach. So I would call him immediately and just say, hey, you know, once the season ends, is this something you'd be interested in? And maybe he says no. And if he does, you move on.
Dan Hefner at Dallas Baptist, he's done a really, really good job with that program. Another private school, smaller than TCU. They actually were a big contributor in knocking the Frogs out. So those are the first three names that come to mind for me. I would definitely see, you know, what Vitello and Hefner's interest level is. And then you have a great internal candidate as well with Sarluce as your pitching coach.
I was going to say Hefner too. I was thinking, you think Dallas Baptist, right? Kind of similar, it'd be kind of a natural step up, right? To go from DBU to TCU. Let's talk about the two teams remaining from the Big 12, Texas and Texas Tech. Texas cakewalked into the next round.
Yeah.
They barnstormed their way. And I thought Texas Tech played really well. Texas got a really good opportunity to kind of waltz into the College World Series. Their pitching was phenomenal this weekend. Their offense was also phenomenal this weekend. They turned it on and kind of made a statement, I thought. I know there's – you know, Arkansas had to scratch and claw, and I think they showed that quality in the end, that, you know, why they are the number one team. But, man, if you had to say, hey, who looked the best from this past weekend, I would say, one, I love the way LSU fought back from losing that first game to come out to win that regional. Two, man, Texas, I mean, just absolutely throttling everybody. So what were your impressions of Texas this weekend?
I thought they took care of their business. You know, the pitching staff looked great. As you said, Ty Madden, I think, was sharp in his start against Arizona State. And they took advantage of what happened. You know, they beat a good Arizona State team. They get Fairfield in the regional final. And they sort of ran out of arms and they did what they were supposed to do. But your point about the lineup is good. It's getting better. Ivan Melendez has been really solid for them all season, but he's a power hitter. Mike Andesito is a spark plug at the top of that lineup. He gets on base and then can push things in the running game. Cam Williams, Trey Faltini have come on as of late. So early on in the year, you know, they would win the series, but they would drop maybe a game on Sunday because they just weren't scoring enough and gave up too many runs. They really feel like Arkansas is very, very good, but they put a lot of stress on Kevin Copps, who is their long reliever / closer. He had to pitch a bunch in that region.
Yeah.
And he did a great job. I mean, he might very well just carry them to a national title for all we know.
He's kind of their Andrew Miller, right? Like it's very, very Andrew Miller-ish.
I mean, he'll come in the fourth,
right,
the fifth, or in the eighth with one out with a couple guys on. It's just kind of whenever they need.
Well, I will say game. I love that strategy. I'm always like, I always in the mind that in postseason baseball, you know, any capacity, you always work backwards. You always go, you know, you save your closer, right? You put your closer last. Now, to me, you go to your best arm as soon as you need him. And so I like that strategy. And look, maybe not for his pro prospects or his health, going to the well too many times might not be good for him. For Arkansas, it sure is.
But yeah, it's working, and I like it as well. But UT has more depth as far as starters, and yes, good opportunity. They play South Florida this week. It was a 4 seed. You know, I don't really know what was going on with the Gators. I know Kevin
was weird.
O'Sullivan.
That was weird.
Yeah, Kevin O'Sullivan was going to LSU. Now that's kind of in flux, but they just got waxed, and the Bulls took advantage of it, and they end up winning the whole thing. So Texas should sweep and get to Omaha fairly easily. You know, you always have to watch with a hot team, but they're just so tough to beat because they can, you know, get 6 or 7 innings out of their starters. They have a good back end of the bullpen, and then that lineup has gotten better as the year's gone on.
Yeah, they score 11, 10, and 12. You know, so when you score across the weekend 33 runs and you give up a total of 5, you're feeling pretty good about where you are. Texas Tech, on the other hand, I mean, they took care of business in their regional as well. You and I have talked a lot about, look, kind of a weird year for them, right? Kind of a weird resume. But the one thing they do very well is they win at home. And they were at home this past week. And what will happen again this week, and as they play Stanford, a very good Stanford team, might, I would go as far to say you could maybe probably even favor Stanford in a neutral setting. This isn't a neutral setting, right? This is the gusty plains of Lubbock, Texas. They did a great job this past weekend. What do you think about their matchup now coming up with Stanford and how they played in their regional?
I think Tech's matchup with Army to start that regional is a perfect example of why it's so frustrating to play them. Like, Army got up 2-1 early in that game. Mm-hmm. They were doing everything, Josh. I mean, they were getting infield hits, like working guys around, scratching and clawing. They scored on an error, like they stole third base, a Tech error, gave them a run. You know, that's the kind of things they're having to do to manufacture runs. And Tech had like 6 hits on the day, but they hit 3 bombs. One of them is a 2-run homer, and they end up winning 6-3. And you're just like, man, like, we played better than them today, but it didn't matter because they hit the ball at the ballpark. And they beat a good UCLA team twice, which is impressive. You know, Tim Tadlock is just a really good coach. Like, they are kind of are inconsistent at times, but when this part of the year rolls around, they just seem to really lock in. Stanford's a good team. You know, they were pushed on Monday by UC Irvine, but they won that game pretty comfortably. Mm-hmm. They have some good pitchers. I really like the Red Raiders' chances at home. I think they're going to get enough out of their pitching staff, and they're going to hit home runs. And it'll probably take 3 games, but I like their chances to also be there representing the Big 12 in Omaha in about a week.
Yeah, and you look at the tournament, you know, for them, the problem, they lost 2 games basically by that identical score, right? 7-2 to TCU and then to Kansas State. And it's the offense kind of going cold is the issue there. They are, you see this a lot with some of these teams, right? I mean, it's not always about, for them, it's not always about hitting, you know, 1-9, right? It's about being able to drive the ball out of the ballpark.
Yeah.
And that's, look, that's a way to manufacture runs. You know, that's the way to do it. And if you can bring that kind of power this time of year, the one problem is it can dissipate, right? And you don't want to always rely on that, especially once you get to Omaha, where I feel like, I'm not sure if this is the case anymore, but home runs in that ballpark seem to, at least the old one, I know the old one, it was really hard to hit home runs. I think it's the new one got a little bit better, but is it still pretty hard to hit it out?
It's still a pitcher's park. I mean, there's definitely more homers than there were at Rosenblatt, but
Good old Rosenblatt. Yeah, it was hard to hit one out there with the bats.
It was hard to hit one out, but it's still, you're going to see a lot more doubles and triples because guys are driving the ball the gap.
Right. I thought their pitching showed up too. I thought their pitching was, I mean, and I thought their pitching was pretty decent in the Big 12 tournament. I know they have 7 runs, but I mean, it's still not horrible. You know, they give up a total on the weekend, 3-2-2. So, I mean, you're giving up 7 runs in 2 games. You're in a pretty good spot. Today's Locked On Big 12 podcast is also brought to you by betonline.ag. It's going to be a busy weekend in sports. NHL playoffs, NBA playoffs, Major League Baseball is going on. There is soccer with the Euros starting on Friday. There is so much going on right now, and you can get in on the action right now at betonline.ag. Sign up today on your laptop or your mobile device. Use the promo code LOCKEDON. That's LOCKEDON, Locked On, and you will receive a 50% deposit bonus. So if you deposit $100, they'll give you an extra 50 to play with, and so on. Once again, that's betonline.ag. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Quick thing, I want to switch to you with some football. There is some college football playoff, you know, expansion, apparently, that's supposed to happen at some, you know, point in time. Everybody talks about the TV contract, and I've always wondered why they can't just rip it up, right? I mean, I feel like this is one of those things they can just do pretty easily. Especially if you went to ESPN, you said, hey, look, what if we did more games? I'm sure they'd be like, sure. Would you want
to? Yeah,
I'm sure we can amend this contract. I think that's totally fine. You know, that's a bit simplifying it, but you've seen the proposal for 12. It's going to be talked about and kicked around by the College Football Playoff Committee. 12 teams. I believe it's also too, it's going to have them on in certain sites as well, you know, playing the on-campus games. But you and I don't think really kicked around this too much. I don't think you and I have talked about it a whole lot. What are your thoughts on playoff expansion? Everybody's got one. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I'm all for it. I mean, I understand that there have been a lot of blowouts in the college football playoff, and it's basically been Alabama and Clemson for the past decade or so. But I think if you expand it, there's a chance for there to be a more even playing field, because maybe then some schools can sell recruits on, like, hey, you can come play in the – like, when it was four teams, yeah, we weren't playing in the playoff. But now we have a legit shot. And I just think more game, more playoff games is good. I mean, you know, what's the difference between Alabama beating up an eight seed and then beating, you know, losing a Monroe in October in Tuscaloosa? I'd rather see a playoff game. I'd rather see a game with some implications. So if that means, which I don't think it will because, again, money, but if that means cutting a game in the regular season, I'm fine with that. Every other sport in the world has a working playoff format. I think FBS college football can figure out a way to do it and include more teams and make it more fun. I'm surprised they're going to 12. I thought they'd go to 8, but I'm okay with it. I mean, again, the more teams in, the better.
Yeah, I'm with you. So I used to be of the mind kind of starting off when people put 8. My issue was, hey, I don't think there's 8 teams that should be playing for a championship. You can make an argument some year that there are barely like 3 teams that should be playing for a championship.
Yeah.
So at that point, yeah, you know, if you make more compelling matchups, the better for the sport. I mean, yeah, if we're getting massacres anyway, you might as well make the matchups a bit more intriguing. And here's the thing. If you expand the field, you're going to get some of those matchups that they're going to be competitive. Eventually, you're going to have some competitive games. You're going to have some Georgias versus Oklahomas. You're going to have a couple of those. And look, those teams might not make the championship. Hell, they might not even make it out of the next round. Right. But, you know, those teams might not win a championship, rather, you know, let alone make it out of the next round, is what I'm saying. The basic premise here is that it'd be five bids for the 5 major conferences. I'm sure people will complain that the Pac-12 doesn't deserve one. It's whatever. It's here or there. Basically making the play-in games the conference championship games. One for the group of 5 highest ranked team. And then there are 6 spots for at-large teams. My first thought here is like Notre Dame. So this might be more incentive for them to join the ACC, right? Because if you join the ACC, you then now double your opportunity, you know, because starting off, you're just fighting for an at large. If you join a conference, and I have not read exactly if Notre Dame is affected by this, but that's kind of where my mind went to first. What did you think?
No, it's a good point. And I feel like that's one of the reasons they're pushing 12, because if you had 8 and you have 5 automatic bids and maybe you have 1 group of 5 bid as well, then you're really only talking about 2 at large. And then you run into a scenario where, like, you know, a 1-loss Texas A&M is the 8 team and, number 18 team in the country, Oregon, who won the Pac-12, gets in. But, yeah, Notre Dame, I mean – I guess it's just that solo TV contract they have is the main reason why they wouldn't want to join the ACC, along with being an independent school. But I do feel like it gives them incentive. And they competed really well last season while they were in the ACC for a year. So do they move over? You know, does BYU look to try to make a move somewhere if they feel like they can be consistently good? There's a lot of those things that could play out. But more teams in, more chaos. I think it's a good idea for the sport overall.
It's a busy day, Steve. And the NCAA is in court, right? NIL stuff. TCU is going through coaching changes. We got playoff expansion. Recruiting is happening again. So it felt like nothing was happening. All of a sudden, everything is happening. Well, I appreciate your time, as always, hopping on with us.
Thank you, Josh. I appreciate it, man.
All right, that will do it for today's show. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, at LOBig12. You can follow me at @JoshNeighbors_. On the next show, we will discuss the Women's College World Series, and we'll dive a bit more into playoff expansion as well. Until next time, my friends, as always, stay safe.